The F-U-T-U-R-E should be a positive thing. Body and soul and you, we're in the same game.
One and the same, everyone came in the same chains. Caught with the same aim, brain game.
Hey, thank you for joining us tonight for the Black Ears 10-Minute Break. Up today for the panel is Jay Lewis, one of our contributors, the educator extraordinaire. Guest tonight also, Mr. Tash Mosley, producer and talent manager. And extra special guest tonight, Mr. John Bird III, editor-in-chief of Sickly Cat Magazine. Check it out if you are not in the know. So, tonight's topic, immigration. Does this affect us? What do we think about this issue?
I'm going to jump in as the resident educator here and say that this has been so, there's been so much debate just in the lunchroom with my colleagues about immigration overall and then the effects of that particular topic in the classroom. And I'm saying that just because I've watched the negative stereotyping that has shown up, the racist undercurrents, become a point of contention with people of color.
Right.
With people of color and how it is that we, you know what I'm saying, are feeling about this, how it is that we are affected. And I will tell you that I have seen my classroom change. I have. And I know part of that has to do with the fact that I have a larger number of my Latino students in my population. And part of that has to do with some, in part, with regards to the immigration of their parents and or family members.
And how has it changed?
I mean, I can't even sit here and pretend like it hasn't really offset in a major way our resources. What once upon a time, we were working really, really with a limited amount of resources in education anyway. Of course, now that depends on where you are. Where I am, I'm in the Inland Empire. I'm actually in a really interesting little enclave, a conservative enclave, where, you know, the doctors and lawyers live, but there's also this, you know, working class population has very much been inundated. And the resources at my school, I have watched them completely be impacted in a huge way, where we once upon a time might have been massaging and managing in a good way. Now we have these issues on the table that are directly linked to my, I mean, this burgeoning population of Latino students. That's real.
But yeah, I was going to say, how do you know that the tax on the resources are coming uniquely from what you're suggesting is burgeoning Latino population instead of, you know, just limited city funds and cuts here, cuts statewide, actually,
right,
which we know
right,
about to education.
Right.
And
I mean, and of course, I couldn't pigeonhole it and say absolutely that's 100% where I think that those numbers are coming from. But I will tell you that I think it is a definite factor, because if you have parents who have immigrated, be that illegally or legally, if they get pregnant and that child is born on American soil, then they're citizens. And then by right, as a public education or the institution of public education, I have to, as a teacher, that student has to be incorporated in my classroom. And that's what I'm saying in terms of the impact.
So is it just the impact of the numbers, of just having a larger class size?
That I think that that's some of it too. But I also have to say that in terms of actual numbers, I watched the demographics on my campus change, where once upon a time I might have had a population of students where it might have gone 60, you know, 25, whatever the breakdown happens, you know, in terms of the others and stuff like that. The Latino population on our campus, in terms of the data, is shifting and changing. And now they are actually almost equal to the white students on our campus.
So has that changed, like, in terms of bilingual education? Or how does it negatively affect the school environment because of the demographic change?
Part of what happens is the presence of more people out of a singular cultural paradigm oftentimes will put educators, administrators a little bit on edge. I can't not address the Latino population in my school because I've got more Latino kids in class. And their needs are oftentimes, it is specific oftentimes to maybe language, to socioeconomic status. And I'm not trying to say that education hasn't already been in a crisis, don't get me wrong. But what I am saying is that from a resource standpoint, even if we had you know, the monies that we don't have in the budget, I'm still dealing with this particular, you know what I'm saying, this particular factor that we really need to have some honest conversations about. Because as a teacher who doesn't speak Spanish, at some point, my job may be up.
In that particular area, I think.
In that particular area.
In any civilization, we're always going to have some type of demographic shift. And what makes this situation unique right now is that the lack of resources causes us to magnify every single change.
Good
because
point.
Now we have to change this and change
good
that.
Point.
But,
right. Good point.
You know, it's not necessarily, I'm not finding the negative, I'm not seeing what's negative in the demographic shift in a school district.
Okay.
I think what's happened is the way the school district has chosen to make these changes, in addition to cutting out the fine arts and most of the electives and foreign language, they've also cut out ELL classes or second language learning classes. And so those of us that are in the classroom, and if you're not a Spanish speaker, your challenge is to get your students to all master a topic. And see, for me as a teacher, I'm teaching English most of the time. There is my challenge, because I'll have a population of students who are native speakers or are second language learners, but have been in this country long enough and have parents who are English speakers, so they're on point. But then there'll be students who might pop in the middle of the year who just moved here from Mexico or Nicaragua or some other place. And the challenge is to get them up to speed, up to grade level, and they might be completely, like, above grade level in their native language. But here, it's a totally different thing. What I will say, though, my Latino students, I have to give it up to them. When we have that situation, they will rally around that student and support that student like you have never seen before. And that, for a teacher, is a blessing.
True.
Because where I have my challenges, my students previously would step up, you know, and assist me and assist that kid.
Right.
So.
Right, good point.
Yeah.
I guess my problem with the whole immigration argument as it's been presented to us recently with Arizona is, like, it's just basically very, very thinly veiled racism.
Yes.
Right.
And with black people in particular, they've been piggybacking on white racism to, I guess, air out whatever grievances they have with their dwindling community.
I agree.
And it just for me, it really bothers me. Like, this issue of immigration, if we had a bunch of family-oriented, kind of white Anglo-Saxon, very religious, whether it's Catholicism, folks from Canada who were willing to take jobs in, you know, farmlands of California for low wages like Latinos are, this would be a non-issue. They would have had amnesty years ago. Oh,
right.
They would have welcomed them with open arms. They look like us. But, you know, we want to talk about the safety around the border towns.
Exactly.
They've been as safe as they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
But people want to mention, you know, anecdotal stories like John mentioned, about somebody getting shot by an illegal immigrant. Like, that's neither here nor there.
Right.
And I think black people are in a crisis, particularly in L.A. I have two friends who are really, they talk about, I miss my neighborhood.
See, but that's a fallacy. I think, we had that same, people said the same thing about us. When we first came, my grandfather moved.
Right.
And the black community was on the east side. And, you know, we couldn't buy a house west of Figueroa.
Right.
You know, eventually we started, you know, infiltrating these neighborhoods. And they had the white flight and they moved out of there. Now it was a completely black neighborhood. Latinos started moving in from the east side. And now we're having the same type of flight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like what Malcolm X calls the house nigga mentality.
Yes.
Where we're like, you know, ooh, massa, our house is on fire.
Right.
Massa, our house is on fire.
What we gonna do? Right.
What we gonna do?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And now we're adapting that same mentality of the people that oppressed us. And we're saying, you know what? We're entitled to this land.
Right.
And you guys are coming here illegally.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's just, I mean, it's a sad state when you see the black community turn on a fellow minority. Because we're fighting over the crumbs.
Right.
We're fighting over South Central LA. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Seriously?
Right.
I mean, it's no prize.
There are people who will get, like, one of my friends is an older guy who knows his LA history really well. And he remembers the heyday of Central Avenue. And for him to see Central Avenue, as far as, you know, there's no enterprising black community and mom and pop shops. I always try to separate that, you know, when he talks about it. That's a separate issue about black economics.
Right.
You know what I mean? And supporting black business. But he you know, really feels as if his world is crumbling around him.
Okay.
And it's fear-based. And
okay.
It's Tea Party. And he, so that Tea Party part exactly. that talks about Mexicans, right. he right. can jump on it.
Right.
Because he really fears the fear.
But nobody,
feels the fear of...
Nobody told us to move off the East Side. Nobody told us right. to sell our houses and move to Palmdale or move to the Inland Empire.
Right. Right.
Nobody told us to do that.
Right.
We left vacancies in our community that they filled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the same mentality. I remember when we were growing up in L.A., Fox Hills was a spot.
Was the spot. Yes.
Fox Hills was cracking. And right. over time...
Even in the Inland Empire, yeah. we knew it was cracking.
Marina you know? Was cracking for a second, too. Remember Marina Del Rey?
They Marina was cracking, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing about it was that that community, it started turning really black. A lot of black people started going there, so
right.
us uppity black folks were like, oh, it's too ghetto because there's so right. many black people there. Damn, we need to go to the Beverly Center.
Right.
Now
right.
the Fox Hills Mall is ghetto, so we go to the Beverly Center.
Right.
Then the Beverly Center gets too black, and they're like, oh, that's too ghetto. We need to go to Westside Pavilion.
Right. right.
And we constantly run from ourselves,
right.
and now we're blaming Latinos because they fill the voids that we vacated.
Yeah. Historically, that's one of the problems in our communities. It's totally a separate conversation, honestly. But we tend to do exactly what white folks have done to us, to other people. I remember being a L.A. child and growing up in South Central Los Angeles. I remember on my block, there was one Hispanic family. And I'll never forget, they painted their house fuchsia, hot paint. And
they had chickens
yeah.
in the yard.
You know, my granny had collard greens in her yard.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Wasn't nobody complaining about
exactly.
that. But, I mean, people on the block were up in arms. We had old white ladies on the block talking to my grandmother, my grandfather. What are they doing with this hot pink house?
Right.
And it was always this sense of them being, like, just one notch lower on the totem pole than us socially.
Right.
And so that gave us a reason to point the finger at them and look down on them. You know, they got 15 people living in that house and just,
mm-hmm.
you know, talking a lot of shit about them
right.
when honestly they had a tighter familial unit and community
Preach.
Than we've had in I don't know how long.
Yep.
And so in that regard, you can't even be mad at the fact that their numbers have gotten to this point. They work together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we work together, it wouldn't be that issue of all of us running to Palmdale and Lancaster like that's the shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then, you know, when the property values plummet being totally assed out and can't move back to the city.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's not on anybody but us.
Yeah, you've got a good point.
But anyway, I digress.
But also, I want to go back to the education issue because I think there's most Latinos that are here illegally would love to be legal. They would love to pay taxes.
Right.
And if they were given the opportunity, they would seriously boost the economy here in California.
Okay.
So we wouldn't have the issues with budget crises because they would be paying their taxes like they want to.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You ask any illegal immigrant right,
right
now, they would love to pay taxes.
Right, right.
And we make them out to be these freeloading, fence-jumping
right.
Minorities that are just leeching the state, and that's not the case.
Right.
They want to pay if they
But
could.
Also, we don't acknowledge the contributions that they are making.
Right.
Right.
Like John said, they do all the jobs that we no longer have to do.
Right.
Who is cleaning people's houses?
But no, someone has to do them. Or like,
but we're just not doing
willing.
Them.
Pick
yeah,
our
right.
food.
That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Right. Picking
exactly.
the farmers, the people that, you know, just the stuff that we no longer feel like we have to do. But here's a question. I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Because this always comes up. Language.
That's
should it be a requirement that they learn English?
It should be a requirement that we learn Spanish and French and everything else that every other country in the world, that you can't name a country
right.
that doesn't speak, that the average person doesn't speak
at
more
least,
than one language.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, and we're here
yeah.
thinking that our language is so superior that anybody who doesn't speak English is less intelligent.
This
Here's
is true.
We're the ones who are less intelligent because we do not speak Spanish. Not the other way around. They speak English better than we speak Spanish.
I don't think anyone should be fired because they don't know how to speak Spanish.
Now, that I agree with.
And they're serving a Latino community. I honestly don't think they should be fired. But I do believe that people should be hired, and this is basically incentivizing those of us who don't speak a foreign language like Spanish or French to learn another language. Just, I mean, it's not like we have a limited mental capacity to learn a language. We can learn a language.
Yeah.
It's not an issue. But then also, no, what? We speak English in America. I mean, that's just what it is. We're not going to change our constitution and rewrite it in both Spanish and English. You know, we're not going to conduct the laws of or conduct
the business
of
whatever
of Sacramento
okay,
or Washington
right.
D.C.
in
any
Spanish.
Other language,
mm.
even 50 years from now, if we end up becoming 60% Latino, that's not going to change.
Right.
But those people who want to stay competitive in the market, they need to learn Chinese and they need to learn Spanish.
Yeah. But, and that goes and back to the education system. Right. They should not take those things out of school thinking that that's not going to help students, you know, increase literacy overall. Part of, I think, to me, having just a broad education is getting all of those pieces in foreign language is important. Absolutely. And the kids not having access to that is really just putting them at a disadvantage for when they become adults and have to enter the workforce and have to deal with the fact that we are in a bilingual society. Well, I will say this, with those numbers great, though, like a lot of my African-American students, because my school was 98%. Mm-hmm. My kids spoke Spanish like they were natives, right. My black kids. And we did have a lot of kids who were Dominican and some who were, I'm forgetting
like
now.
Afro-Latinos.
Right. Right. Look, even if they weren't, they were claiming it just to be down. Right. You know what I'm saying? But just being in that environment, they picked up the lingo. And so in that regards, it's definitely having a good effect since the schools have taken it out.
I will say, as a teacher of English too, and just the community of standard English learners, which is not based in a color, whoever is trying to acquire the language, be that my Latino student or my black student or right. my Asian student,
right.
all of them are in the same position with regards to that. So I agree with you, John, from a linguistic and a literal standpoint, it is better that they are at least bilingual. So they are, and I tell them, you are really one step above, or you are one step ahead at least of the rest of your peers if you command more than one language. But both languages in proficiency, which is the other side of the coin with regards to the impact that you were asking about in the classroom. And that is that if I have students who are not literate in their mother tongue and they are struggling, then when they come to acquire English, they're going to struggle there too. And sometimes that will weigh down on, you know what I'm saying?
That's true.
The process and the productivity. However, I'm not going to demonize those students. I want to talk honestly about what happens in a classroom where everybody is working to do the same thing. And I've got children who come in at deficits. But that's a reality in all classrooms. I'm saying that it's important for us not to have the conversation that we need to have about what it is that's happening from an illegality standpoint. Because I think that's a separate thing that we're all trying to muddy in there together. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's why I think initially the whole point of bilingual education, because I'm an educator as well, and I teach math.
Uh-huh.
And what they were trying to do is separate the people who speak Spanish.
So, yes, they are.
So when we're teaching math, we're teaching it in Spanish so that right. they don't lag behind the rest of the
right.
community.
Right.
They could keep up because right. we're teaching it in their native tongue. But
right.
But during the same time, we're also trying to teach them English.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is like, oh, no, how dare we speak anything but English in the classroom?
Right.
And these kids are now falling behind because they can't understand what I'm teaching
True.
When I'm trying to teach them math
True.
And English.
True. You're absolutely
And that's a problem.
Right about that.
And it's like we're trying to create a permanent underclass.
You're right. That's absolutely 100% true. And it's unfortunate because I'd rather that it play itself out differently in our classrooms. But what it's starting to do, just like you said, in terms of us really scrambling for the crumbs, my children start to sort of subscribe to that too. You know, it is now that the illegal immigrant has taken on the face of this particular cultural ethnicity, while everybody else is so much ahead of. We're one up on now.
Mm-hmm.
Where once upon a time, historically, like you said, black people were in the same position. We were doing the same kinds of job, and then we had the demographic shift.
And the kids play on it too.
Yeah,
I learned that when you have people who
yes.
are coming from different countries and different places, they have a tendency to talk down to
yep.
certain people, depending
true.
On where you're coming from and based on complexion.
This is true.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And John, you know there's an elitism that is present in certain languages. Because if you was rolling up in there and wanted to learn how to speak French or German, then they would say, oh, how can we accommodate your foreign language need? No problem, no problem, because we hold that particular language and culture higher than we do. Oh, you speak in Spanish? That's not a worthwhile or a noted thing to do. That's not a worthwhile social capital to be bilingual and a Spanish speaker. Now, if I was a French speaker, German speaker, if I spoke Japanese,
right.
then I would be seen, you know what I'm saying, as a more valued member in the classroom, in society, as a worker. But that little piece right there that John was talking about, this racist element, or that might have been Tash, that is showing up and is starting to get us away from what we really need to have conversations about. Mm-hmm. And that is all of them. And when I say them, I mean my students. Everybody being proficient in English.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? In terms of where it is that I am.
And
most
everything
prominent.
Else for that matter.
And everything yeah. else for that matter. And everything else for that matter. True.
So in summation, panel?
I think I probably wrapped it up. I just want us to be able to think critically about those things that have to do with how we are affected as people of color. And not to fight amongst ourselves, but to be very realistic about who it is and who it is that's showing up, especially, like I said, in my classroom, and being sensitive to that.
Yeah, because the black and brown war is very real, but we have so much more in common than we do, you know, differences. So thank you all for joining us. Hopefully you had 20 minutes instead of 10 this time. Take care. Signing off.
So since we all talk the same slang, stop killing my brother, because we're all from the same gang. Don't you know?